for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Wall Street Journal. This weekend, actually on Friday, March 13th, they had a huge section on the coronavirus, and it is entitled, How to Navigate the Coronavirus. As the U.S. faces a pandemic, the advice is consistent and clear. Don't panic, but be smart. Understand the risks and take the necessary precautions. This Wall Street Journal special report is designed to do just that, help you navigate through the tricky weeks ahead. What do we know about the virus and how dangerous it is? How can you best protect yourself and your loved ones? What are some tips for working from home? What's the best way to deal with quarantine? In this report, you'll find the answer to these and other questions. We encourage you to read these articles and continue to stay informed online at WSJ.com. And this is why I am reading these articles to you. Very, very important and so well done. Okay, first off, let's clarify the difference between coronavirus and the flu. Coronavirus versus flu, a comparison. They have some similarities, but some major differences. The new coronavirus and the seasonal flu are similar in many ways. Both are respiratory diseases that spread through droplets of fluid from the mouth and nose of someone who is infected. Both are contagious, produce similar symptoms, and can be deadly. But there are some major differences. While both produce many of the same symptoms, fever, cough, and muscle aches, and are particularly hard on the elderly, they come from two different families of viruses. People have more protection from the flu because there is a vaccine, and they are exposed to flu viruses every year. There is no vaccine yet to protect people against COVID-19, the disease caused by the new virus. I think what we're seeing with COVID-19 is what influenza would look like without a vaccine, says Neil Fishman, chief medical officer at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania and an infectious disease specialist. Scientists haven't yet established exactly how deadly or transmissible the new virus is. But so far, the new coronavirus appears to be deadlier than the seasonal flu, which kills thousands of Americans every season. Calculations of the mortality rate for COVID-19 have ranged between 2% and 3.4% since the virus was identified in China in January, according to World Health Organization data. Those percentages are derived by dividing the number of confirmed deaths globally into the number of confirmed cases. By contrast, the seasonal flu has a death rate of approximately 0.1%, so 2 to 3.4% versus 0.1% morbidity. COVID-19's higher death rate is one reason that billionaire global health philanthropist Bill Gates recently warned in an article in the New England Journal of Medicine that COVID-19, this is quote, COVID-19 has started behaving a lot like the once-in-a-century pathogen we've been worried about, end quote. But public health scientists say the real death rate is probably lower than the current estimates. U.S. health officials suggested in another article in the New England Journal of Medicine that the death rate could be well below 1%. Other estimates have ranged between 1% and 2%. That's because current calculations are based on tallies of people who were ill enough to be tested, they wrote. Epidemiologists say they are certain there are many more people who were infected but didn't receive a test, either because they weren't ill enough to get one or didn't have access to a test. Problems with a test developed in the U.S. means many people haven't been able to get one. Studies suggest there are also people who were infected but had no symptoms, a common occurrence with many viral infections. We don't know the proportion of mild or asymptomatic cases. Mark Lipsitch, professor of epidemiology at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and director of the Center for Communicable Disease Dynamics, said in a recent teleconference. In addition, the mortality rate has differed by region and by intensity of transmission, according to a report by an international mission to China of experts led by the WHO. It was 5.8% in an explosive initial outbreak in Wuhan. But in other less hard-hit areas of China, which had more time to prepare to care for patients, it was 0.7%. The rate in China has come down over time, the report said. In South Korea, which has had more than 7,000 cases, the mortality rate is 0.7%. To calculate the, quote, infection fatality rate, end quote, meaning an infected person's risk of death, will require large-scale studies to determine how many people in an area where there has been an outbreak have antibodies to the virus in their blood. Dr. Lipsitch said, that would show how many people had been infected, he said. Two blood tests have been licensed in China to conduct such studies, according to the WHO. The new coronavirus, called SARS-CoV-2, infects the lower respiratory tract. About 80% of people in a cohort of nearly 56,000 people in China had either mild or moderate illnesses, according to the report by the experts who traveled to China. Those illnesses started with a fever, dry cough, fatigue, and other flu-like symptoms, but sometimes included shortness of breath and progressed to a mild form of pneumonia, according to the report. An additional 13.8% became severely ill, requiring oxygen, and 6.1% were critical, meaning respiratory and organ failure, according to the report. People over the age of 60 and those with underlying conditions such as cardiovascular disease, chronic lung disease, diabetes, and cancer were at highest risk, the report says. There are contradictory reports of how transmissible COVID-19 is. The disease does not seem to spread as easily as the flu, according to the WHO, which found that most of the spread in China was through close contacts like family members. Other disease modeling suggests the new virus is more transmissible than the flu. Experts say the new coronavirus may appear to be more transmissible than flu right now because people have at least some immunity to seasonal flu viruses, since the flu goes around every year and there is a flu vaccine. About 34 million people in the U.S. have had the flu this season, which isn't over yet, but is starting to ease, according to the latest flu report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Of them, about 20,000 have died. Flu strains change slightly every year, and the number of deaths depend on how severe the strains that are circulating that season are, according to the CDC. The most severe flu pandemic in recent history killed tens of millions of people in 1918 and 1919, meaning more than 2.5% of those infected, according to CDC research. Okay, so we are much more vulnerable to the COVID-19 strain. All right, our next story. As the virus spreads, drug makers hunt for effective treatments and vaccines. Dozens of drug makers are scrambling to develop vaccines that could prevent people from contracting the new coronavirus or therapies to treat people infected with the respiratory disease it causes. Testing of several potential drugs and vaccines has already started, and more trials are in the works. Additional studies could follow if researchers find that products approved for other uses, or even ones they discarded, show promise in their lab tackling the virus. "You're seeing the industry wheel into action," says Jeremy Levine, chairman of the Biotechnology Innovation Organization Trade Group and chief executive of Ovid Therapeutics, Inc. The development process will be slow, however. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, has said it would take at least 12 to 18 months to know if a vaccine is safe and effective. Industry officials agree that the time horizon for any indication of the drug's effects is months away. And in drug development, most therapies fail before reaching the market. Battling the unknown. There aren't any drugs or vaccines approved for COVID-19, the respiratory disease caused by the new coronavirus. Industry and academic researchers ramped up their discovery efforts in January after scientists in China provided the virus's genetic sequence. At least 35 potential vaccines are under development by companies or academic researchers, according to the World Health Organization. More than 40 life sciences companies have virus-related projects, Dr. Levine says. There are nearly 400 global clinical trials related to the coronavirus underway, according to the WHO. The newness of the virus is complicating research efforts. Researchers face the challenge of properly designing trials in a short period for a relatively unknown virus, industry officials and analysts say. That makes it harder to determine what measurements will indicate a patient's response to a therapy, says Yaron Weber, an analyst at Cohen Incorporated. Already finding patients eligible to undergo testing hamstrung one trial in China. "We're trying to run large randomized studies in a very quick period, in a disease that we barely understand," says Michael Yi, an analyst at Jefferies LLC. Inovio Pharmaceuticals, Inc. plans to begin testing its experimental vaccine in healthy volunteers next month and publish its human clinical trial data this fall. Healthy volunteers in the Seattle area have begun enrolling in a trial testing Moderna, Inc.'s experimental vaccine. Emergent BioSolutions, Inc., said Wednesday it is trying to develop treatments, one of which would be derived from the blood of coronavirus patients who have recovered. "Everyone recognizes that a vaccine will really not be available for the next year to year and a half, and the quickest path to a product that is going to provide some benefit is some type of therapeutic product," Chief Executive Robert Kramer said in an interview. "Some of the most advanced programs are exploring whether drugs discovered for other uses might be effective treatments for COVID-19. Among them, an antiviral therapy from Gilead Sciences, Incorporated, called Remdesivir, that was developed to treat the Ebola virus, but then scrapped after proving less effective than rival drugs during testing. Researchers revived the drug after the COVID-19 virus was found to belong to a family of coronaviruses. In mice, remdesivir, and that's R-E-M-D-E-S-I-V-I-R, remdesivir, had worked against Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, another coronavirus. Researchers in the U.S. and China have started testing remdesivir in people infected with the coronavirus. The company says it will start its own late-stage studies this month. Gilead has given the experimental drug, though it hasn't been proved to work, on a compassionate basis to several hundred patients with confirmed severe COVID-19 infections in the U.S., Europe, and Japan, a company spokesman says. Other approaches. Also under study are some approved HIV drugs like Keletra from AbbVie Inc. and Prescobix from Johnson & Johnson to see whether they could work against new coronavirus infections. In January, both companies supplied their drugs to Chinese authorities for testing. Media in China have reported that AbbVie's Keletra is proving effective, but the company says it can't confirm the reports without access to data from the trial. A J&J spokesman says the company didn't have an update on the China research. Regeneron Pharmaceuticals Incorporated and Sanofi SA are taking steps to start studying in patients whether their drug, Kevzara, approved to treat rheumatoid arthritis, could treat symptoms of new coronavirus infections. Roche Holding AG is exploring conducting U.S. studies of its similar-acting rheumatoid arthritis drug, Actemra. Actemra, yeah, A-C-T-E-M-R-A. Researchers in China have already begun a study, according to spokeswoman for Roche Genentech, Roche's Genentech subsidiary. Pfizer Inc. and Merck & Company say they are assessing whether their assets can be potentially worth using toward coronavirus. J&J aims to begin a trial later this year with its experimental vaccine candidate, while Sanofi hopes to potentially enter trials with its own within a year and a half. Recent history suggests that drug makers will have a rough road of it. In epidemics such as severe acute respiratory syndrome, Ebola, and Zika, researchers and companies mobilized for vaccines and treatments, although the results were mixed. For companies spending heavily on COVID-19 drugs and vaccines, one issue that could affect responses to future pandemics is the return on investment, especially if the pandemic has run its course by the time a product has been approved for real-world use. If COVID-19 ends up being a seasonal or recurring disease, there could be a stronger commercial opportunity for companies, which might be inclined to charge higher prices, Mr. Yi says, though he expects the opportunity to be minimal for now, given the public health emergency. He says Gilead is likely to employ a, quote, humanitarian approach, end quote, with a price to merely recoup its development costs. Gilead said it has yet set a price for its drug and is focused on responding to the coronavirus outbreak. All right, who's most at risk? What are underlying conditions and how many people have them? As the new coronavirus spreads around the world, health officials are repeatedly assuring the public, your risk of getting seriously ill or dying is very low, unless you are older or have an underlying condition. That is a lot of people, including millions of Americans. Data from China, where the epidemic began, show death rates that are startlingly higher than the average for people age 60 and over, as well as for people with high blood pressure, diabetes, asthma, and other chronic conditions. In one large study by the Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention, 14.8% of people 80 and older and 8% of people 70 to 79 died. For people with cardiovascular disease, the mortality rate was 10.5% and 7.3% for those with diabetes. Those rates compared with a 2.3% mortality rate in the overall population of 44,672 patients studied through February 11, China's CDC says. Those categories potentially apply to a vast and growing swath of the U.S. population, The number of Americans 65 and over rose 27% between 2011 and 2018 to 52.4 million, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, while the under 65 cohort grew 2%. Older Americans make up 16% of the U.S. population. About 46% of American adults have high blood pressure, according to guidelines by the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association. About 34.2 million people, or 10.5% of the U.S. population, have diabetes, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. China's statistics are from the early weeks of an explosive epidemic in which hospitals were overwhelmed and doctors struggled to figure out how best to care for patients struck with a new disease. Death rates in less hard-hit parts of China have been lower and have come down for the whole country over time, according to the WHO. Precise death rates are also unclear because it isn't known how many people have actually been infected. Many have either not been ill enough to suspect that they had the disease or haven't had access to a test. Still, the data show that people with aging or taxed immune systems have a far more difficult time fighting off COVID-19, the respiratory disease caused by the new coronavirus. It's very clear that this virus has greater mortality and morbidity in older individuals and those with chronic conditions, says Mark Mulligan, director of NYU Langone Health's Division of Infectious Diseases and Immunology in New York. Morbidity is the rate of disease's presence in a population. Older people are generally at higher risk of becoming severely ill from infectious diseases, such as the flu, Dr. Mulligan notes. As people age, the immune system undergoes, quote, immunosenescence, gradually losing its ability to mount a response to an infection as robustly as it once did. Precisely how that happens is an active subject of study. Among the changes, the thymus, an organ of the immune system, shrinks starting at young adulthood. T cells, soldiers of the immune system, which mature in the thymus, lose some of their function. Older people often don't develop high fevers as a result, and a temperature not regularly recognized as a serious fever may be missed or mistaken for another problem, says Dr. Jingqi Dong, director of the Institute for Healthcare Policy and Aging Research at Rutgers University. Thus, says Dr. Dong, 100.5 may be a true fever, possibly indicating the presence of COVID-19. Lung function also declines with age, making respiratory diseases a particularly serious threat for older people, he says. Older people are more likely to have serious underlying conditions that also put them and younger people at risk of complications from COVID-19. Cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and lung diseases all tax the body, making infections harder to fight off. So cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and lung disease, says Bruce Ribner, director of Emory University School of Medicine's Serious Communicable Diseases Unit. The system is just not able to put up with that much of an assault, he says. High blood glucose impairs the ability of white blood cells to fight infections in people with diabetes, Dr. Ribner says. Viruses can settle more easily into people whose lungs are impaired from a lung disease. Scientists say they are trying to learn more about the apparent link seen in China between severe COVID-19 and high blood pressure. People with cardiovascular disease often have lung disease too, and generally are more susceptible to flu and viral pneumonia, experts say. U.S. health officials have urged Americans who are vulnerable to limit travel and avoid large crowds. The U.S. government has urged nursing homes to restrict visitor access to reduce the risk of spread. People at higher risk should heed the same precautions that exist for everyone. Wash hands regularly, stay away from sick people, and keep up to date on vaccines for flu and pneumonia, the U.S. CDC and infectious disease experts say. All right. All right, so what are the symptoms of the illness, and how do you know if you have it? The virus infects the lower respiratory tract. Patients initially develop a fever, cough, and aches, and can progress to shortness of breath and complications from pneumonia, according to case reports. Other reported symptoms include fatigue, sore throat, headache, and nausea, with vomiting and diarrhea. Some people become only mildly ill or are infected but don't get sick. Others are mildly ill for a few days, then rapidly develop more severe symptoms of pneumonia. Some patients haven't had a fever initially or might develop a walking pneumonia, meaning they might spread their infection to others because they aren't sick enough to be in a hospital. And what is the incubation period? People become ill between 2 and 14 days after infection, according to most estimates. One report described a person who became ill 27 days after infection. However, most start showing symptoms about 5 days after infection, according to a large study by disease analysts at Johns Hopkins University. Okay, well, we have come to the end of our program today. I hope you've learned a few bits of information, perhaps that you haven't heard yet on regular news media. Next week, we will do a little bit more on the coronavirus and probably go on to some other things as well. But anyway, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen next time. I hope that you've enjoyed it. I'm Annika Gall, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Remember, cough into your elbow, wash your hands, disinfect everything that you've touched. Before you go into your house, wash your hands or use hand sanitizer. Be well. See you next time, my friend.